this is Monocle Reads. I'm Georgina Godwin. My guest today is often described as one of the most connected people in London. She's a writer, a speaker, a social entrepreneur, and a strategist whose work focuses on finding solutions for humans in an ever-changing world, something that seems particularly important in these difficult and strange times. She is my good friend, Julia Hobsbawm. Welcome, Julia.
Hello, lovely to be with you, albeit at a safe social distance.
Now, you've previously been a guest on Meet the Writers, and we went into your background in some detail on that programme. We talked about your interesting family, your father, Eric Hobsbawm, the prominent Marxist and great historian who was born in Alexandria, your OBE for services to business, and that interview can be found in our archives. So people who want to know a lot more about your life can look that up there. But today, I wanted to catch up with you to talk about your new book. It's called The Simplicity Principle, Six Steps Towards Clarity in a Complex World. Now, I understand that this was inspired by Maya Angelou.
It was. Hundreds of years ago, when I was in my 20s, I had the great luck to be her book publicist at Virago Press, the feminist book publisher who discovered unknown and not prominent writers amongst them at the time, one Margaret Atwood and one Maya Angelou. And I was hired to promote her autobiography. She was in her mid-60s, I was in my early 20s, and it was an unlikely spark, but we became great friends. And in fact, I stayed with her a couple of times, I hung out with her and people like Oprah Winfrey and the late great Jessica Mitford. It was an extraordinary period of my life. And Maya Angelou, who was a brilliant, as you know, poet and polemicist, achieved great cut through with her simplicity and sophistication of language. And she always used to say, as an aphorism, keep it simple, sweetie, which was a rather gentler take on the more brutish, mannish, keep it simple, stupid. But that concept of cut through did stick with me. And as I think you know, because you've kindly had me on Monocle several times to talk about my work before, I'm really interested in this age of connection and infobesity where we're abundantly connected and we do need cut through. And so when I decided to write a book really looking at the benefits of simplicity versus complexity, without, I hope, being simplistic, Maya came back into my mind, yeah.
You say in the book that life is more complex than it needs to be. Can you give me a few examples in everyday life where you think this is the case?
Well, the first thing is that I've really tried to stick quite closely to the basic neuroscience of the human brain in a digital brain era. And the fact is that our brains have quite a small cognitive limit, a working memory of about 7 items at any given time. And so when you constantly put a human with our, not only our need for sleep and rest, but also not to be overwhelmed and overloaded, you quickly find that the pace and scale of modern life is a problem, particularly when we're dancing on the digital dance floor. You know, we're in and out of apps, we've got multiple windows open, and that stresses our attention, it stresses our sense of what we can manage. So that's one example. The second, I suppose you could say that every single policymaker and politician and bureaucracy around the world is experiencing it in the corona crisis in particular. Systems are way too complex. It's very difficult to reach in and clearly and simply go, let's do this and let's do this now. And I hope I make a distinction between simplicity and what is simplistic. And I hope I make the case for, if you like, good complexity. The human brain itself is the most complex creation, actually, you know, with billions and trillions of different thoughts and processes. So I'm not trying to say we don't want complexity, but I do actually think we need to put it in its place.
So if that's the problem, how would you recommend that we simplify our lives?
Well, I'm kind of interested in geometry and systems that we can learn from nature. And my mantra for the book is keep it simple, learn from nature, and in particular, learn from the 6-sided hexagon shape and number that you find abundant in nature. And that 6 is no accident, because it is within that working memory limit from the perspective of organizing and managing and a business approach, which I take in all my work, is you do kind of need a number to focus on. And the hexagon shape is relevant because it's very efficient and resilient in nature, most famous perhaps being the hexagon shape hive of the bees, but also carbon structures and even the snowflake. And so I think that one of the ways of simplifying is to limit, is to minimize. So one of the things I talk about in my book is the need to have clarity and how clarity hinges on making decisions and how making decisions hinges on not getting too many decisions to make and having decision fatigue. So for me, it's all really about what Steve Jobs embraced, which is simplicity. And he said simplicity can be incredibly hard to achieve, but you can move mountains when you get there. And of course, Apple, that iconic design, conceptually and visually, really hinged on minimalism, on a sleek reduction. So ultimately, keeping things simple, whether it's about a decision or an action or the way you organize your day, for me, and I've used myself as a guinea pig, by the way, you know, in my life and in my work as an entrepreneur and a consultant and a writer, is that if you follow a bit of an ordered pattern around the clean geometric lines of symmetry and simplicity, it tends to bring you, on the whole, more control and more of a clean cut through. But it doesn't mean that everything simplifies. It means that you can quite often face the complicated, the fiendishly complicated, even the chaotic, with just a little bit more calmness and purpose.
And you mentioned that overcomplicating things can be dangerous. For example, the Boeing MAX 8 disasters. Just to unpick that for us a little.
Yeah, so I wanted to really evidence-base my sense and my argument and my thesis that if we accept complexity and we lean towards it, that it creates serious problems. And I found that you could see evidence of this in all sorts of systemic failures. So interestingly, even though I write very much for an everyday market of people who want to improve their fitness around what I call social health and how you operate in this digitally always on world, and you know, take some of my tips, if you like, as easy to grapple with, you know, almost exercises or recipes. I am also really interested in policy and organizational impact. And, you know, I'm associated with the Cass Business School in London. So I wanted robust case studies. And a couple of them came to mind that were to do really with transport disasters, one of them being the MAX 8 Boeing disasters, in which over two separate occasions in a very short period of time, nearly 350 people lost their lives. And when the aviation authorities tracked back the origins of those disasters, they were that a complex computer system was introduced by Boeing that was too complicated, wasn't explained properly to the pilots, and that mid-air disaster struck. And so you had a complicated mix of over-reliance on computer systems, which were overly complex and which failed, and you had an underinvestment in humans being able to even understand those systems. And so that spoke both to my desire to say, look, if you create things that are too complicated, they are going to overwhelm. You know, if it looks like a duck, sounds like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's a duck, you know, it's very simple. If it's too complicated, it's going to be a problem. But the second was that it really underscored the fact that there's a bit of a fantasy going on in business and even in government that, look, there's a tech app for that and everything's going to be fine. Whereas I think the human has got to remain at the center of everything we do. You see this actually during the coronavirus crisis, Georgina, around the world. Contact trace systems that rely both on technology and on humans work better than the ones that just rely on technology alone. And so, yeah, I'm really drawn to those examples of systemic failure, bureaucratic failure, where the system itself is too complex.
Mm. And now, of course, you mentioned coronavirus, but I know that when you started writing this book, we'd never in a million years thought we'd find ourselves in this precise situation. And yet the book really is very relevant right now, isn't it?
Yes, I'm really lucky, and my heart goes out now that I regard myself as part of the community of writers, and that is something I started in my middle age. But my heart really goes out to all the amazing writers of fiction or non-fiction that didn't have a news hook. And I did feel lucky. I've written about Simplicity in a Complex Age. I think it was timely before the coronavirus crisis, which is probably why I found a publisher that wanted it, but it really appears to have stayed the distance. I've done nothing but interviews since the end of March, and we're now nearing the end of May, because even though there was a brutal simplicity about lockdown, in some ways, lots of us have clarified and reset our lives, something I argue for in the book anyway. The reality is the world out there is much, much more complicated. How are we going to go back to work? How are we going to live and work when we can go back to work? How do we travel? How do we look after our health if there's no vaccine? And so I think that embracing ancient concepts of simplicity and modern practical applications with my exercises and recipes may help people hold on really to a simple sense of sanity in what is an extremely alarming time for everybody.
Now, alongside the book, you also have a podcast. Tell us a bit more about that.
Yes, well, I do like the broadcast medium. I love talking on the radio to people like you. And my company, Editorial Intelligence, produces podcasts for a range of clients. And I thought, why don't I actually produce a podcast that goes with this, in which I'm in conversation with leading figures from around the world, science, business, culture, to talk about simplicity versus complexity. And I've really enjoyed it. I'm about to do the sixth programme with the historian Neil Ferguson. That's going live on Monday. I've interviewed the mental health campaigner Ruby Wax, the British government's chief innovation officer, Sir Mark Walpert. And I'm really enjoying those conversations, and I'm gratified in a way that this idea about how do we keep it simple in complex times really seems to land for people. And they either like it on a really practical level. How do I get stuff done in a day? Which I must say I'm obsessed by. I'm a bit of a productivity nerd. I can't get enough of people's tips on how they do it. But also, I think people really want the big philosophical questions. How do we get through the world? What's the meaning? What matters? Is the way we've designed contemporary life actually commensurate with who we are as human beings? And I think the coronavirus crisis has really thrown those enormous questions further up the agenda. And I think with technology and privacy and techlash before coronavirus crisis, we were thinking about this stuff anyway. Do you think so?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think we have been presented, albeit in a tragic way, with a perfect opportunity to recalibrate how we operate.
Yeah, I think so too. And again, not to be simplistic, you know, frontline workers have got a brutal simplicity. They have to go to work on the front line. They don't often have control over their hours, their conditions of work, the kind of work they do. But enormous quantities of the world, in fact, the data shows about a sixth of one sixth of the world's workers are in the knowledge economy, are in the economy where we're making our own luck and where we're going to increasingly become freelance. And so I'm also writing very much for that market, those people that have to actively juggle being in their heads at home and at work, being literally at home, but also being at work, deciding what work gives them meaning, deciding how to configure what you take in by way of information. So I devote a lot of my book to thinking about what I call infobesity, that excess of information. How do you start to chart a social health journey through the tsunami of information that's out there? How do you curate so that you do listen to Monocle, because that's itself wonderfully curated? How do you tune out endless TikTok, endless Instagram, endless Twitter, endless Facebook, but not so much of it that you aren't up to speed with the current of opinion? You know, I do think that if you go back to the ancient Greek philosophers and Aristotle talking about the ancient four elements of earth and wind and fire and water, this concept of a river has always been incredibly strong through ancient philosophy. And Heraclitus talked about the river. And, you know, there's a river of information that we have to swim down every day of our lives now. And that matters. And simplicity and the simplicity principle, I hope, is a way of owning that and saying we can't just welcome infobesity as we've done before, just like we've learned to say, do you know what, having an abundance of food all the time doesn't do us any good. We're now experimenting with more meaningful diets like intermittent fasting. We're getting much more sophisticated about how we simplify our lives, and I really think it's time we did, and I think we should.
Absolutely. Julia, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
That was Julia Hobbs-Bormann. Her book, The Simplicity Principle, Six Steps Towards Clarity in a Complex World, is published by Kogan Page. It's out now. You've been listening to Monocle Reads, thanks to the production team of Nora Hull and Charlie Filmer Court. And you can download this show and previous episodes from our website or app, from SoundCloud, Mixcloud, or iTunes. I'm Georgina Godwin. Thank you for listening.